Hello, and welcome to another episode of True Stories of Good People, a GoFundMe Heroes production. I'm your host, Kelsey Little. I've been a GoFundMe for over 9 years, and I have to tell you, one of the things that amazes me every single day is the fact that, even though it doesn't feel like it sometimes, there are kind humans out in the world making it a better place every single day. If you're new to True Stories of Good People, in each episode of this podcast, we sit down with someone who's making a difference in other people's lives, or who's had their life changed because they asked for help and were met with the kindness of a community that was ready to answer the call. And today's story is a beautiful example of that. After Anel Alvarez had her son Adrian, she was going through a pretty dark time in her life, feeling a sense of losing her identity, and she knew she needed to do something to pull her out of it, but also knew she couldn't do it alone. So she called up an old friend with an idea. Let's start a dance troupe. A pretty simple idea on its face, but what turned out to have so much power to build community, celebrate Hispanic culture, and provide space for healing. This is the story of Grupo Folclorico Itzcali. Hello, True Stories of Good People listeners. I'm thrilled to be here today chatting with the amazing Anel Alvarez and Stacy Valdez. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. So you're both based in Kansas City. How long have each of you been there?
I was born and raised in Kansas City. For the most part, I grew up in Wyandotte, Kansas. And then we moved over to Prairie Village. I graduated from Shawnee Mission East High School. So I've been here, honestly, my entire life. This is my town, you can say.
Nice. How about you, Stacy?
I was born in California in Azusa, a really small town in LA. I moved here when I was 3 months old. So I've been living here in Overland Park, Kansas ever since. I also graduated Shawnee Mission East High School. And yeah, I've just been living here my whole entire life as well.
Awesome. Yeah, I relate to that. I was born in Colorado, but I moved to California when I was like 2. So I say I'm from here. It's like, yeah, you don't remember that. Nice. How would y'all describe your city to someone who's never visited before?
Our city is, I think it's pretty calm. There's not much to do here. It's just kind of a daily routine, you know. We have a few pretty nice spots, but I would say it's just pretty much more family-based. Mm-hmm. You get to spend a lot of time with your family, you know. Everything's pretty close for the most part. Traffic is not super insane. And if you're from Kansas, you think the traffic is really bad. But I went to California, I've been to Houston, I've been to Chicago, and it's like not even close. So our traffic is great. That's our best feature, I think.
As a Californian, that sounds amazing to me. I ask because Kansas City actually plays a big role in the story that we're here to talk about today, which is all about this amazing dance troupe that you started, Anel, and we'll get all into the details, but just to start, I would love to learn the story of how old were you when you first started dancing and what kind of dance you started learning at that age.
Okay, I'll go first and then Stacy has her own story as well. So I started dancing. Well, my mom, you could say, she forced me into dance at 5 years old. I absolutely hated it. I didn't want to be there. It just wasn't my thing. I was more growing up more of a tomboyish kind of girl. I wanted to be playing soccer and like doing all like the tomboyish stuff, playing with cars. But my mom really wanted to like just kind of push me back into like where I come from, even though I'm born and raised in the U.S. She really wanted to push like my culture and my roots into me. So she started me really young. I would say I started dancing from 5 to 7, and then I stopped dancing because my parents got divorced. I met Stacy through church. My mom was part of the person that would do the place for all the church, and she would include all the kids and kind of to teach us about her religion and so on and so forth. And so I met Stacy through there just because we were the little actors of her play. So then my mom met this guy from California. His name was Oscar, and he was very much involved into like the Mexican traditional dance, and he was dancing in California before coming here. So then when he arrived here, he really wanted to start his own thing. And so he met my mom through church as well. Then Oscar and my mom started a group when I was 15, so in 2015, where It involved just five of us. It was Oscar, our teacher, me, Stacy, my cousin Fernanda, and Stacy's cousin David. That didn't last very long. That group didn't last very long. I think because we were so young and like we would just do it because it pleased our parents, you know? Yeah, that's basically how I started and then how I kind of met Stacy.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so we met through church and I went to practice one day. And before I went to practice, I told my mom that I didn't want to dance. I was like, I don't think that's my thing. Like, I don't even like dancing in front of anybody. Why would I want to be in a group, you know, in a dance group? But once I got to practice and I met everybody that was there, like the teacher, and I met Anel, we all became really close. So we were like really good friends and we enjoyed dancing. And like she said, I guess after a while, we were just kind of doing it for our parents, not really because we liked it. So then after that, I stopped dancing for like 4 years, 5 years, probably, until Grupo Iscali started. That's when I started dancing again.
That's so great to hear the full backstory of not just how you both got into dance, but how y'all met. And like, I think it's just a great foundation to understand why this is so special, what you're doing now. Just to backtrack a little bit for our listeners, in case they're not familiar, Folklorico dance, how would you describe it to someone who's never seen it before, doesn't know like what it entails?
I think every Latin American country has their own folklorico. Basically, just the word really represents the dance that originates from that specific area. So folklorico is not just Mexico, but it has to do with Jalisco has its own folklorico, Durango has its own folklorico. So all the states from Mexico have their own specific folklorico, and they have their own specific dress, they have their own specific accessories, which is crazy. Like one state of Mexico can differ so much from another state of Mexico, the music, everything. Mm-hmm. So I think it's an easy way to put it is just the art form, mm-hmm. dance of our culture. Through folklorico, you can express what the weather is like in that specific state simply by how we're moving our feet, what we're wearing, if our hair is up, if it's in a ponytail. So I think it's just the art form of that specific state represented through dance.
That is such a illuminating description. And now I want to like know all of the nuances between states and like what makes them different. Also, so you mentioned the dress. So there's a special outfit that you wear and also a special type of shoe.
Yes. So for example, Jalisco and Veracruz differ so much. Jalisco, you're going to see more thick material. You're going to see vibrant colors, especially for our dress. We want it to be very unique. I think all the other Jalisco dress, you're going to see that the fabric is, you could say, pink. And then all the ribbons are like these 27 different colors of ribbons. Mm-hmm. But we want it to be unique and say, we want to look elegant. Yet we still want to represent the state of Jalisco and what it stands for. And we don't mean to do it in like a disrespectful way, you know? So we decided to just stick with black fabric, which a lot of people were like, you guys are wearing black fabric? What? But I tell my girls to choose three to four colors. And that dress is basically your own, you know, you're very unique. Some girls wanted to do specific colors because it's their favorite color, or like it's my mom's favorite color, or this color represents this for me. And so I think when we chose our own dresses for Jalisco, it's very elegant, but at the same time it still represents, you know, what it needs to represent. For the shoes, we use two different types of shoes right now. Mm-hmm. It's the regular zapato that is just gonna have your regular shoe. It's kind of like the tap shoe. Mm-hmm. It's made out of wood and then animal skin, right?
Yes.
So then at the bottom it has nails, so that's what makes all the tapping noise. Mm-hmm. And then we have the adelitas, which is more of the boot form of that, and you will see that for norte, which is all of your more country-like, you could say, regions, and Jalisco as well. So the shoes, you use them for more of like Veracruz, where it's really hot in Veracruz. It's more tropical. The dresses are more light and flowy, and they're white because it's so hot there.
I think that's so cool that you know, as the leader of your group, were like, I want each of your dresses to reflect you and your individuality. Do you each have like one color that you picked for your dress that you has significance behind it that you could share?
My colors?
Yeah.
Honestly, my colors were a mistake. I really wanted my colors to be pink and blue, but this other girl took my colors. And so I was like, man, well, I want to stick with pink because it's one of my favorite colors. Well, black is my absolute favorite color. So therefore, that's why we have black fabric. But pink and yellow are pretty close. So they're just my favorite colors. I think they make my skin color look really good. It stands out. You could say all the colors I picked, I try to make it as like, oh, she's right there. They're very vibrant. I love my dress so much. I'm obsessed with it.
What about you, Stacey?
My favorite color is red, and my other color is a turquoise. I was just trying to like see what really matched with the red. I know for sure that I wanted red until I did find that like turquoise aqua kind of color, and it went really well. So, and like she said, like I wanted my dress to pop out, you know, with the colors and everything. And I really love my dress as well. Each and one of us, like once like they have their own dress with their own colors, it's like, wow, that really is you.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. And I've seen pictures and they are gorgeous. So if you're listening, run, don't walk, to go look up the dance troupe and see their amazing costumes. Annelle, so fast forward many years, you welcomed your first child, your son, Adrian. He's so cute, by the way. I saw him in pictures in that article. You've shared that you were facing a bit of a heavy time in your life. Would you be able to share a little bit about that with us?
Yes, it was very hard for me to talk about it before, but now it's, you could say it was kind of a blessing and a curse in a way. Iskali really helped me get out of a dark place. After I had Adrian, I loved being a mom and everything, but I felt like my identity was kind of stripped from me into somebody that I've never met before. And now I have to care for this child. And I was very young, I could say. I had my son when I was 19. I had a lot of dreams. I wanted to go to college. I wanted to be an EMT, travel the world. But, you know, it's just life. And so then at this time, I'm going to shout out one of my friends. Well, one of our friends and a very close person that has supported us since the beginning. His name is DJ Luigi. He reached out to me and he called me one day and he said, hey, Annelle, do you still have your group? And I was like, I mean, I didn't have my group. I didn't have a group, period. And I was like, yeah, I do. And he's like, okay, awesome. This was in 2020. He's like, awesome. Yeah, I'm going to have a performance for you guys in 2022. It's a wedding. It's a big wedding. Be ready. It's like in August or October. I'm not sure yet, but I'll send you all the information and I will let them know that you guys are in the package. So I just want you to like be great. And I was like, okay, well, that's great. Thank you so much, you know? And then I hung up and I was like, I just lied to one of my really good friends that I had a dance group. And I think till recently, I didn't tell him like, hey, you actually pushed me to start my own group because I didn't have one. So then I reached out to Stacy and my cousin Fernanda. And I was like, hey, do you guys want to, I don't know, maybe start a group? you know, I've always wanted to start my own group, not only because I'm very sensitive. So growing up, my teachers were very harsh. And it was kind of, maybe that's why I didn't really like it, because it was kind of traumatizing. So I reached out to Stacy. Stacy was absolutely down to start a group with me. I reached out to my cousin. She was absolutely down to start the group with me. And maybe my cousin was with us for, I would say, a month. Mm-hmm. She went to maybe one or two practices, and then she started college. And dancing just wasn't it for her no more. and she had a lot going on. So it was just me, Stacy, and Stacy's sister, May. It was just three of us, like, starting. And we didn't know. We were just like, let's just do it for fun. Let's just, I don't know, just do it.
See what happens.
See what happens. We'll figure it out.
That's so wild knowing. First of all, I did not know that story of your friend, like, booking you for a job in 2 years. And you were like, absolutely. That's amazing. And just knowing, like, how it's grown from that moment until now. And we'll get into all of the amazing developments. But in those early days, you practiced at a local park, if I'm understanding right. Would you dress in, like, the full outfits when you would do that?
We would just have our skirt on.
Yeah, our skirt. It's still pretty hot.
Yeah,
like practicing at a park with just that skirt, that thick material and everything.
I would think so, yes. All black as well, as you mentioned.
All black, yes. And our shirts are black. So
yeah.
I love it.
I don't know what we were thinking.
I mean, black is like the chicest, you know, color. So I think it's an excellent choice. Well, so I would imagine that practicing in a public park in these, like, very colorful, you know, outfits with ribbons would attract some attention. So I'm curious if people would, like, come up to you and ask you, like, what you were doing or what it's for.
Yeah. So we were actually, at, like, a kids park. And it was, like, in March or April or so. And so that's when it starts to get warm. And there was, like, a lot of kids at the park. And as soon as we put our skirts on, we actually, like, got up and started practicing. There was a lot of, like, little kids around, like, three or so, you know, coming up to us. And they would just literally just stand there and look at us like, oh, you guys look amazing. You guys look so pretty. I love the colors. And then the moms would come up to us and ask us what we were doing. And we were like, oh, no, we're just starting up a group.
That's so funny. You're like, yeah, we're practicing for a gig we have in 2 years, no big deal. Well, so another part of the story that I learned about that I love, so people started asking you eventually when you were gonna perform publicly, and kind of the same thing happened. You were like, soon, you know, yeah, we're gonna have a gig here. And even though you didn't have any performances booked yet, that kind of, like, lit the fire to take things to the next level. And so how did your first performance come about, and what was that experience like?
Yeah, so we actually got our performance by mistake.
Good.
We have a friend, which is, you could say, our personal photographer. He tries to follow us everywhere we go. He takes amazing shots of us. His name is Alejandro Olivares. He's the owner of Olive Tree Studio here in Kansas City. His studio is based down in Westport of Kansas City. So for first, we have this thing called First Fridays. Every Friday of the month during the summer, all the businesses down in Westport, they are able to showcase, like, what they sell. They can have specials. Artists can come down and do, like, live paintings or so on and so forth. So it's more of, like, a community thing that they do just so people don't get bored, basically, during the summer. So the first Fridays in April, there's this coffee shop called Oyama. She's a Latina. She's Mexican. She was born and raised, I believe, in Jalisco. And she is just across the street from our friend's studio. I reached out to him and I was like, hey, can you, like, ask your friend over at Oyama? Can you ask Leslie if she can, like, let us perform? And he was like, yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll ask her. We arrived to his studio and he was like, what are you guys doing here? And we're like, what do you mean? What are we doing here? Like, we arrived ready, our hair up, our makeup done, our dresses on. And he's like, I forgot to ask her. Like, let me call her really quick. And we're like, you forgot to ask her? Like, we're ready to go. What do you mean? And so he calls her, and Leslie's kind of, I mean, she's never heard of us. You know, nobody at this time has ever heard of us. And she's like, yeah, I guess, like, they can dance a couple songs outside of my coffee shop. Sure, why not, you know? And so we danced outside of Oyama, and she usually holds, like, a little pop-up event. She lets vendors, like, kind of camp out outside of her coffee shop. She closes usually her coffee shop at, like, 2:30 p.m., but for First Friday, she's open up until, like, 10 p.m., I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was having this pop-up shop. She had an artist doing like a live painting. And we arrived, we set down her speaker and we're like, and she's like, just go, just start dancing. We're like, okay. We pulled so many people.
Yeah, we did.
Like, people were stopping in their cars. They were honking at us. It was a great experience.
Yeah.
And now Leslie is one of our really good friends. Mm-hmm. And she's one of our sponsors as well. Mm-hmm. And I always tell her, if it wasn't for Leslie, I mean, maybe we wouldn't even be a group no more, because she's the first person to, like, open her doors for us.
Yeah.
I already love this story before we started chatting today, but just all of these details of like community support and like happy accidents. I just, it's so joyful. Yeah. I love this. Well, so from there, as I understand it, people started to, you know, take note. Obviously you drew a huge crowd and people started to know who you are, and you started to practice more. And I think the group even started to expand. There's one specific story I just have to know the details of. I know, like, something I love about you as the leader of this group is like your vision, and you just believe that you can achieve anything, and you can, and you have been doing that. And so I know you had this big vision as things started to gain momentum to perform at a halftime show during a Kansas City Chiefs game, which is incredible and which happened, but it was not for no effort. So I would love to know the story behind that and like how that all came to be.
Okay, so by this time, I think we're just a couple months in. I think we're maybe 4 months in. We have our own, like, we rented out our own little studio to practice at, which had concrete floors, which is such a mistake.
Yeah.
Because concrete messes up our knees and our ankles and absolutely everything in our body. One day I just was looking at my girls, because that's how I call my dancers, my girls. I was just looking at my girls, like, practice, and, like, it's so hot. They're all sweaty, you know. They're all into practice, even though our performances maybe were so far apart because we weren't being booked at this time that much. And I'm just watching them, like, they deserve so much more. And I'm just thinking in my head, like, they deserve to be put on a big stage. Then Diana Munoz, which is, she's a big advocate for the Hispanic community here in Kansas City. She not only reached out to us to perform for one of her events, she had a pop-up event, and she really loved how we performed. Not only because we're the only folklorico group here in Kansas City that's an all-women's group, but because she really liked our elegant dresses and she liked our gritos, which is our representative screams and like yells. She just liked our presence and how joyful we were. And so she reached out to me, I believe it was June of 2021. And she said, hey, there's going to be a first ever Hispanic, Latino representative halftime show in September of this year. She's like, I'm going to try to advocate for you and, you know, like, kind of be that voice for you and give a recommendation that they should reach out to you so you guys can perform a song, half of a song. In my head, I was like, why? But not why because I didn't feel like we didn't deserve it, but why, like, there's so many folklorico groups here.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're maybe the last one that was ever made. Mm-hmm. But other than that, there's maybe five others that have been here forever, you know, and they're all somebody that we look up to because they're maestros. Like, they come from their teachers that were taught in Mexico, and, you know, so I was very baffled by when she told me, like, I want you to go represent, you know, Jalisco at the halftime show. And so that was a conversation with her. We hung up. I didn't hear from her for maybe like 2 weeks. And I was asking her constantly, hey, you know, are we in? Like, are we not in? I didn't want to tell any of my girls yet, but I was freaking out. And I was like doing everything in my power. And when I didn't hear back anything from her, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to reach out to everybody. So I reached out to Travis Kelce. I reached out to Patrick Mahomes. I reached out to their representative, I believe, that's on social media. I emailed the Kansas City Chiefs. I did absolutely everything. I didn't get a response. And so the last thing I did was I went to the Kansas City Chiefs website. I filled out their fan experience, even though I was like, I literally typed out, hey, I've never been to a Chiefs game. I'm not rating my experience. I just kind of introduced myself like, hi, my name's Danelle Alvarez. I have this group, or an all women's group. I think like, just give us a chance. Like, just give us half a song. Like, it can be seconds. Like, just give us a chance to perform. Two more weeks pass by this time it's July. Mm-hmm. And I get a phone call, and I never answer phone calls that I don't know.
Like, it was actually in the middle of practice.
It was in the middle of practice. Yeah.
We were practicing, and all of a sudden she looks at her phone and she looks at me, and I'm like, what? I don't even know what's going on. And so she's like, can you just like take over for a second? I was like, okay. She runs to the bathroom and she's there for like a good 20 minutes. I'm like, what's going on?
And so then I go to the bathroom because I'm getting this phone call, and I'm like, I have a feeling I should answer. You know, nobody really calls me. It's either a performance or, you know, it has to be important. So I'm answering, and it was this lady, I believe her name is Rihanna from the Kansas City Chiefs. She was one of the representatives. And she called me, hey, Anel, is this from Grupo Iscali? And I'm like, yes. Like, how can I help you? And she's like, she's introducing herself. You know, I'm in shock. I'm just standing there in the bathroom, like, with my mouth open, like, there's no way. Like, can you please repeat yourself? Like, tell me one more time. And she's basically telling me that, you know, the Chiefs decided to, like, give us a minute and 30 seconds for the halftime show, and that they were giving a minute and 30 seconds to other local groups, not only just from Mexico, but from Peru, from Colombia, mm-hmm. another folklorico that represents Mexico, and a mariachi band. And so that's really how we got into the Chiefs.
That's so incredible. I can't imagine how you felt in that moment when you told your team. I would love to hear from both of you, like, standing on the field and like looking out and like being ready to go and like knowing this moment's real and it's finally here. Like, how did that feel for each of you?
When we went on, we were actually on the field for like 20 minutes. Like, literally on the field waiting for, like, all the players to get out and stuff for us to, like, jump in and stuff. And all I remember is I was trying so hard not to look up. Like, I was just looking down the whole time or just looking, like, forward. I didn't want to look up because there was just red everywhere. You couldn't even see faces, like, nothing. And I know that when I'm dancing, I at least like to see faces when I'm on the stage or whatever. It kind of, like, calms me down in a way, seeing them or, like, looking at a smile and, like, stuff like that. But this time I couldn't see no faces. All I saw was red everywhere. And so that's when I started to get really nervous because it didn't hit me till that day. I don't know why, it just didn't hit me till that day. As soon as we got to the stadium, I was like, bro, is this really happening right now? And so when we get up there, right, and then there was like, I guess people that worked there that was like telling us where exactly to go, where to stand and stuff. As soon as he like, because I was the second one, it was Anel first in that line and then it was me. He turns around and looks at Anel saying, okay, let's get on now. Oh no, my head. I was like, what? No, like, I'm not even ready right now. So then the guy like starts running, you know, telling us where to go, where they, like, get up there. And, you know, the mariachi went first and like another group did. And then it was us. We actually didn't hear the song in the beginning, like the beginning of the song, because
there was so much yelling.
So much yelling. Yeah, and since it was like in the speakers of like the stadium, we didn't hear like the first 5 seconds of the song, so we were like lost for like a second. But then as soon as like I turned around and I looked at Anel, I saw her, and then she's like, okay, we got this. And so then from there we just did that 1 minute and 30 seconds. It felt like it was just 5 seconds. Like, it went by so fast. It was a really great experience, something that I've never done before, and I'll do it again.
I'll bet you will have the chance, it sounds like. What about for you, Anel, like, in that moment, just before you go on, just knowing that you made this happen through, you know, your vision and your perseverance?
Oh my gosh. I don't even think I slept that Saturday before the football game, I spent the night over at Stacy's house because I knew that my son wasn't going to let me sleep. So I was like, I'm just going to spend the night at Stacy's house. I'm going to get a good rest. Nope. Did not sleep. It was like the night before your first day of school. Like, yeah. You're just staring at your outfit, your new shoes. You're excited for the morning. It was a noon game.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to be there by like 6:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
And then when we arrived to the parking lot, it was absolutely like full already. Yeah.
Wow.
And just seeing all the other groups, like, I think we were kind of like the underdog, you could say. It was very intimidating. And me as like the leader, I was very intimidated, like, because everybody else had like a representative or like a manager and so on and so forth. And it was just me, the leader, my dancers, and our photographer. And so when they would ask us, like, well, who's your manager? And I would be like, me? Who's your leader? Me? Who's the contact? I was like, me. Like, they're like, okay. I'm like, it's just me, the photographer, and my dancers. Like, this is our team, you know? When we were walking through the tunnels and they're leading us to, like, our practice time, it's kind of when, like, it hit me. Wow, like, we're actually here. It's so big, you know? Like, you can't even, like, see the seats. So then we're practicing. Everything went great. We were really excited, but we were really nervous because it was so hot. It was, not only was it hot, but it was super windy. And it was going to mess up our skirt work for dressing. Because of the wind. So yeah. We were really nervous about that. I was just out of it before. And I think I wasn't in the moment until we stepped out into the field to actually perform. And again, like Stacey said, I was leading the line. So when I was leading the line and I look back and we're finally like peeking out of the tunnels and we hear that intense like screaming and everybody cheering and everyone's like having beer in their hands and like having a good time, and I just look back and I look at Stacey's face like, there's no way we're actually here. And I'm looking back at my other dancers and I've never seen them smile so big. It was just such a good feeling to know that we were able to pull off such an amazing thing. Not only that, but in such a short amount of time that we've been a group. By that time, we had only been a group for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And
amazing.
And so when we finally stepped on the stage and he finally gave us the okay to like go on the stage, stand there and like wait for your music, I went, stood there, and I was like, I can't see faces.
Yeah.
And it's freaking me out. I could see my mom kind of because I turned around and my mom was on the other side. So that gave me kind of like a good feeling, you know, a feeling of relief. But I just told myself I need to focus on the screen that's like in the middle of the field. Don't look at faces, just look at the screen. So that's what I did. I focused on the screen and just kind of told my girls before we started, like, smile, do your best. If you mess up, it's okay. It's not going to be the end of the world. All that matters is that we made it here. All that matters is that we showed a lot of people that not only like doubted us, but kind of didn't believe in like what we stand for and what we're doing, that we could do it, you know? And I think that was the only important thing. And as soon as we finished, I remember looking over at Stacey and just like telling each other, like, we did it. We're really here. After that, they led us to go up these steps. All the way up.
Oh gosh.
So we're going up these steps. It feels like forever.
Yeah, it felt so long. And it was like really steep too. So we're like,
our legs are shaking. Yeah. So we're going up these steps and by this time the players aren't out yet.
Mm-mm.
And so maybe like as soon as we start going up the steps, I hear like people, like I see people standing up. Everyone's standing up, they're cheering, they're like woo, yeah, clapping and like good job. And I'm like, in my head I'm like, oh, they're probably cheering because the Chiefs players are out, you know, they came back out on the field. I look back and the players are already on the field. Like they're already like practicing and stuff and whatever. And then I look at the representative and he turns around at me and he's like, yeah, like they're cheering for you and they're cheering for your group. And I just start bawling my eyes out. I'm like, there's no way. We had a lot of people stop us as soon as we got to the top. Hey, like, thank you so much for representing your, like, our country and our culture and, like, Kansas City, you know, like, I feel like in Kansas City, maybe you could see it in, like, LA, Florida, you know, Chicago, Texas, but, like, Kansas City, like, they're like, thank you so much, like, I recorded everything, like, we'll send it to you. So, just overall, it was an amazing experience, and it was just a great feeling. After that, we had a lot of performances.
Yeah.
Just first of all, like, huge congratulations. That is so, I just have the chills, like, hearing the details of the day and what it felt like, and just knowing that the response was so warm and you just made your community so proud. I just, it's so amazing. And that was only 6 months in, which is just wild beyond belief. So you started the group in April 2021, and you actually launched a GoFundMe, which is how I found your story, to celebrate your 1 year anniversary. So I'm just curious, you know, you had some donations come into that, and it's still up if anyone would like to go donate. But what do donations and support from the community help you do more of, and what will it help in the future?
So we actually started our GoFundMe to get a dance floor, a portable dance floor. Not only because we had started off in a concrete studio that was really messing up our knees, just any floor that's not wood, all the impact of our zapateado, which is our footwork, doesn't only just go to our ankles, but it goes to our knees and it goes all the way to our back. So we started the GoFundMe to be able to purchase a portable dance floor made out of wood that we can take to our performances, so the people that book us don't have to worry about if, you know, they have wood floor or not. Like, we would be able to, like, you know, transport this wood floor with us everywhere that we go, not only for us but also for the people of the event. But we also came up with our 1 year, right?
Yeah, our 1 year celebration of Izcalli.
We made a 1 year celebration festival pop-up, you could say, little party that we had. We featured all of the local vendors. We had a lot of vendors that had to do with pastries, desserts. Carmona's Chamoy, which is one of our sponsors, they have Aguas Frescas, which is the natural fruit waters. We also had one of our really good friends that owns a band here sing for us. DJ Luigi was there. We had a lot of support from the community and we didn't really expect it.
A lot of people came. It was crazy.
I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, in addition to you had some lovely kind donations on your GoFundMe, and it sounds like in general your community has really rallied around you to support what you're doing. And I'm just curious, like, what has that support meant to you all? And do you consider this kind of like a community effort?
So at the beginning, it was really tough, just because I think, I mean, even myself, I was very used to just hearing the same folklorico group's names. So when we came out and, you know, I was at the time a 21-year-old, everybody didn't really judge us, but you could say that it's more of our cultural thing that we don't have guys. So we're an all women's group, and everybody was really shocked about that. What do you mean this group that's only women can perform these regions that are meant to be performed as a couple, you know? And we were doing a lot of different things that really, I think, shocked the community, and people like to see diversity, you could say, and different art forms of folklorico. So I think Oyama, Leslie, supported us a lot. She shot us out anytime that she could on her social media. Alejandro Olivares, which is the owner of Olive Tree Studio, he was always posting us. Diana Munoz, which is the advocate for the Hispanic community here in Kansas City was always shouting us out, these specific people that have believed in like our vision and what we're doing, and that we're doing it not because we want to be the greatest, but we're doing it because we really enjoy our art and we really have a passion for what we do. There's no right way to dance folklorico, you could say. You know, I think we've showed a lot that all women group can do a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been really shocking for everybody, that we don't, you could say, we don't really care. That, you know, there's some people that are like, well, they're an all women's group, there's no way. But there is a way. If you have a passion for what you do, you'll make a way.
A part of it that is really so empowering, like it's inspiring in general what you've done, but I think that's probably setting an example and inspiring probably more, you know, young girls who maybe have been told that they can't do certain things, be like, yes, you can, and look, we're doing it. So that is so cool. Well, I just wanted to thank both of you for sharing your story with me today. I was so excited about this conversation before, but honestly, this is just filled with so much joy and excitement, and I just can't wait to keep following you all. And if this is the first year and a half, then I can't even imagine what's coming next. But just kind of as a closing thought, I think a really powerful part of this story is that it was born, Anel, out of, you know, your personal story of going through a tough time, and you really reached out and, you know, sort of created a community and kind of asked for help from your friends to start this, and it really pulled you out of that time. And I think probably some of our listeners can resonate with that, and they may be feeling similarly. So if anyone listening is going through a tough time, and I'd love to hear from both of you, and, you know, is nervous to ask for help or support from their community, what advice would you give to them?
Well, for me, that I'm very stubborn. I pushed back my feelings, but I did. I try to hide so well that I wasn't going through postpartum depression. You know, before I had a kid, I didn't really believe in it. Like, kind of thought, how did you just give birth to maybe the most beautiful thing that you're ever going to have, and you're going to be depressed? But then when I went through it, I really understood that it's not just about that. It's about that, you know, you were your own person, and like you could do whatever you want. You could say, you can have all these hobbies and, you know, really enjoy all the little things in life. And then once you have a kid, like, you kind of have to step back, and you can feel like you got your identity stripped from you, because now you just feel like you're just a mom, you know? And I asked for help, not only because I wanted to save myself, but I also wanted to like get my identity back, love myself again. I wanted to be Anel, and I wanted to be Adrian's mom, you know? And at the time, I only felt like I was just Adrian's mom. I didn't even know what my favorite color was. I didn't even know what I liked to do. Like, I didn't. So Izcalli, I say, is my second baby, because it has helped me so much. And a lot of my dancers have told me the same thing, that it has helped them a lot going through an identity crisis, going through depression that they were going through. So just to think that I didn't only start this because it helped me, but I started it and it's helping a lot of my dancers go through things that they don't talk about. And, you know, I tell my dancers, we don't have to get together and have like a therapy session and talk about all of our struggles, but just come in through the door. If you want to talk to me, you can talk to me. You know, I've gone through a lot. I'm not going to judge you for it. If you don't want to talk to me and you just want to dance and that's your way of expressing your feelings, then okay, you know, express them. I would like to think that Izcalli is a no judgment zone. It's a lot of good vibes in Izcalli, and that's why I named it Izcalli. Izcalli is a word from Nahuatl, and that's like a Mexican dialect. And Izcalli means the beautiful house among the trees. So it really represented like Izcalli is my home when there's so much chaos going around. I think my advice after my big speech was just reach out. You know, you're not weak for feeling this way. If anything, you're very strong. And all your struggles, there's a way out, you know?
That's very beautiful. Did you have anything to add, Stacey?
My thing was that when Anel and I hadn't been talking for like 5 years, right? After we had stopped dancing back when we were like 15, I didn't go to college. All I did was work all day, every day. I didn't know like what I liked to do. I didn't have any hobbies. Just kind of bored all the time. So one of the examples I'm trying to say is that like if even somebody tries to reach out to you, like don't just let them go and like, you know, be stubborn and don't like talk to them and like stuff like that. But she reached out to me after years we didn't even talk. I was like, maybe this is a sign. Maybe this is, you know, like where I can finally find myself again. And yeah, I was. It was her calling me so we can start this group up. And ever since then, it's like, wow, if it wasn't for that phone call, maybe I wouldn't be here right now. So, yeah, I feel like going through it and stuff like that. And there's somebody really trying to help you out. Like, don't just ignore them. It's like they could absolutely help you out with anything.
Thank you so much to the amazing Anel and Stacey for being on our podcast today. If you'd like to support Grupo Folklorico Izcalli, please visit GoFundMe.com/heroes. And thank you so much for listening to True Stories of Good People. If you were inspired by today's story, please help us out by heading over to the Apple Podcast Store and leaving us a rating or review, and be sure to subscribe to the show. And if anyone you know loves inspiring stories, please share our podcast with them. It means the world to us. For more inspiring stories just like the one you heard today, please visit the GoFundMe Heroes Hub at GoFundMe.com/heroes, and be sure to subscribe to our mailing list so you can get heartwarming stories delivered straight to your inbox. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at GoFundMe. Also, we love to hear from listeners, so if you have any feedback, suggestions, or questions, you can write to us at podcast@GoFundMe.com. Special thanks to Nick Patry, who recorded and edited this podcast episode. He is the best in the biz. We'll be back next time with more true stories of good people. Talk to you then.